Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of 700 Level Radio. I'm your host, Kyle Lutz. Joining me today is a friend of mine and my co-host today. It's good to have on my friend Fred Hugo. Thank you for coming on.
What's going on, Kyle? I appreciate you asking me to come on. I love coming on these.
Yeah, it's great. There's a lot going on in Philly sports right now. Obviously, the Eagles are making a slew of trades. The Flyers, although we're not going to get to them, are right in the thick of things in the playoff hunt. Not too much, obviously, going on with the Sixers and Phillies, mainly those two, but a lot of interesting topics. So today we'll just get into the Eagles. Just been an insane, like, 4 or 5 days. I don't know how Howie Roseman's, like, alive right now. I'm sure he's, like, nonstop, probably hasn't slept in, like, a week or two since he's gotten that GM job. He's certainly been keeping busy, and so have, like, all the reporters on ESPN, like Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport. So we'll start with the biggest news. Eagles traded a few days ago the star running back, or star a couple years ago, and the starting running back and the 2014 NFL's leading rusher, DeMarco Murray, after his only season in Philly, along with the fourth-round pick in this year's draft, to the Titans for their fourth-round pick. Tennessee currently has the second pick in the fourth round, 97th overall, and the Eagles have the 15th pick of that fourth round, 110th overall. Murray signed here a year ago for 5 years at $42 million, and after he just arrived in Tennessee, he's agreed to revise his contract to 4 years and $25.5 million. Fred, what did you make of the deal or the trade after it happened? Obviously, Murray had a horrible year in Philly after that great year in Dallas. I know he had an amazing line in Dallas, which was, as many people can, you know, agree to, was the best offensive line in the league. But a lot of people can also agree Chip Kelly was misusing Murray. You know, Murray's more of a left-to-right running back, and Kelly was kind of using him up and down, if that's kind of the best way to put it. What did you make of the trade overall, and what was your opinion on it?
I mean, I'm one of the few, I feel like anyway, one of the few Howie supporters, and I could not believe he even got this trade done. Like, this was great. DeMarco didn't want to be here, and that's clear, even though the report said he wanted to be, even after the trade, and you could hear his comments, it's pretty clear, him and Peterson, that he didn't want to be here, so it wasn't going to work. So for them to be able to even move his contract and gain anything from the trade, like, I feel like if they could have done the trade for free, it would have benefited, because they basically were allowed to release a player without the maximum cap hit that it would have took, because if you just released them, you would have had no money under the cap, and the fact that they were able to trade him, move up a couple spots, I think was just awesome. It was amazing. I was really excited. It's funny you bring that up first. I spoke to someone from Tennessee today, and they're like very excited about the trade, and it's weird, because both ways, I guess it's a win-win for the Titans, because they need a running back, and he restructured his deal to work with their cap, and it's a win-win for us, because running back is not a premium position, and that the salary he was making is too much for a running back, in my opinion, especially if they're not going to be productive. So I loved it. I thought it was a great move.
Yeah, I was just going to say that myself. It was one of those moves that worked out great for both sides. As you mentioned as well, the Titans, who overall weren't a great team last year at all, they only won 3 games. They scored under 300 points. And their leading rusher only had 520 yards, Antonio Andrews. So, yeah, although obviously Murray wasn't much better, he's obviously a household name. He's going to be a little bit more comfortable now that he's, you know, probably going to be used better. We can only assume that, at least. And you know, this whole thing's behind us. I don't know. He's a class act too. And he even said that he appreciated everything that was going on, and he thanked Jeff, Howie, and Doug. And I was kind of surprised that even after Chip was fired, soon after the off season, soon after the season ended, that he still was uncomfortable here. Were you surprised by that? I thought, you know, usually when, you know, there's a bad relationship with somebody, when you eliminate the one side, like, you know, if you're in a business and you have to cut ties with somebody, usually the business runs a lot more smoothly. And it seems like that wasn't the case. After Chip was let go, Murray was still unhappy. Any idea why that was the case? I know there wasn't really much info shed about that. What's your two cents on that? Maybe he just wanted to kind of start over. Was maybe your opinion on it, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think it was more than Chip. I think Chip in the running situation frustrated him, and he didn't like that. But I think it was more he just didn't like Philadelphia. He don't like the way sports is here and the way the media is all over you every second and everything you say, as well as the fans. So I don't think he could cut it here is what it really comes down to. So when Chip Kelly was his way out, and then when they fired Chip Kelly, he kind of had to say all the right things on, I believe it was ESPN he was interviewed, but behind the scenes he wanted out because the day-to-day grind he couldn't take. And funny, I use that word. Who was on it? Todd Herrmanns was on 97.5 The Fanatic. They had like a little meat locker thing. And one of the stories was, I guess they live in the same complex or something. I don't know how they cross paths, but because Todd still lives in Philadelphia. And he saw him, I think it was week 3 or week 4, in the elevator or whatever you call it. And he basically was like, so how do you like Philly? And he just sighed, and he was like, it's a grind, man, it's a grind. And that was week 4. So, I mean, they did have that bad game against Dallas, but, I mean, for him to even have that perception 4 weeks in, it just tells me that this isn't his city. It's the way we treat sports here just wasn't conducive to the way, I guess, he likes it to be.
Yeah, and, you know, I think he's a low-key guy. You know, he's from the West Coast. He's from Las Vegas, which, you know, obviously can be a little flashy. But it just seems like you said, the media being in the spotlight 24/7, just kind of even beyond Chip, it wasn't the right fit after you just got past the contract. And, you know, we wish him the best of luck. He's not a guy like T.O. where you have a bad taste in your mouth. You know, obviously it should be an interesting case as to how much he bounces back next year. I think he'll have a good year next year. Obviously, he's not going to have as much success as he did in Dallas a couple years ago. But go ahead.
I agree with you. I think he will have a good year. But I actually do have a little bitter taste in my mouth about him. I think he took the weak way out, and I kind of don't like after hearing that story. I guess he says all the right things, but I don't want him to succeed. I'm rooting for him to lose, actually. But I do think he will be successful in Tennessee.
Yeah, it was an interesting way to go, but we'll see what happens. Before we switch to our next topic, an interesting thing about Murray, an interesting stat. He actually, after this past season, he set an NFL record for the largest decrease in yards for an NFL rushing champ from the previous year, from the year that the rushing champ to the year after. The previous record holder was Jamal Lewis. In 2014, Murray set the he had 1,845 rushing yards with Dallas, which led the league. And last year, he only had 702 rushing yards with six TDs after he had 13 TDs in 2014 with Dallas, which when you subtract the 2 years as far as rushing yards, is over 1,000 yards, and to be exact, is 1,143 yards, which set a record, which is pretty interesting. So another crazy piece of news is the Eagles traded corner Byron Maxwell, as well as middle linebacker Kiko Alonso, and this year's 13th overall pick to Miami in exchange for Miami's this year's 8th overall pick. Maxwell just turned 28. He was a 6th-round pick out of Clemson by Seattle. This will be his 6th year in the league. Obviously, he was highly coveted by a lot of teams after his stint with Seattle, but I never thought he was that great of a player. He obviously played alongside arguably the best corner in the league in Richard Sherman. A year ago yesterday, he signed that 6-year, $63 million deal with the Eagles. In his only year with the Eagles, he only accumulated 63 tackles, 2 picks, and 10 passes defended. Now, he had some good games this year, but obviously considering the contract, he didn't obviously live up to it. So it was kind of tough to live up to it in the first place, but I think he did kind of get a bad rap, but it's good to get him and the contract out of the way. Before I get to Alonso, what did you make of Maxwell's year as well as the Maxwell trade?
My expectations for him coming into the year weren't a shutdown corner, because just based on my not – like those safeties in Seattle are – it's just ridiculous how good they are. So, I mean, I didn't expect him to come in here and be a shutdown corner even though he was being paid that money, because – I can't fault the Eagles. He was the top corner on the market, I guess you would say. But I didn't realize how, being how physical that defense is, how soft he was. That bothered me more than anything. I mean, he got beat the first game pretty bad, but I believe after week 3 or 4, he statistically anyway, giving up yards and catches and touchdowns, it went down. So he did improve, but the fact that he's so soft, he just can't make a tackle. It just looks like he's trying to avoid contact a lot. So that really gets under my skin, and that goes more into the trade that went down. Jim Schwartz is bringing a defense that's physical and going to punch you in the mouth, which we all love in Philly, and he just definitely doesn't fit that scheme. So though the contract was high, I didn't have high expectations of him this year, but I didn't expect him to be as soft as he was, you know?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you that he has good games, but he's not that number one shutdown corner that you rarely see in the NFL. I don't want to say rarely see, but obviously, you know, it's not common in the league just because of how many star receivers there are, they're going to get burnt a lot. And starting out in week 1 at Atlanta, he didn't exactly get off to a great start. He was targeted 10 times, and wide receivers that were up against Maxwell had 9 receptions for 154 yards, 30 yards after the catch, and including a 44-yard catch. And Julio Jones was the main beneficiary of that with 141 yards. So after that, he had some good games. Didn't allow 100 yards up until for most of the year. But then again, he wasn't really targeted a whole lot.
Right.
So it's pretty interesting. But so going on to Kiko Alonso, his only season with the Eagles, he was a Chip Kelly guy out of Oregon in his 3rd year. Tore his left ACL September 20th versus Dallas and missed 5 games. According to Dolphins reporter Adam Beasley, I'm going to go back to Maxwell real quick. I don't mean to switch back. Maxwell denied a report that he told doctors he couldn't do a push-up or bench press in his physical following the trade. After last season, following shoulder problems earlier in the year, Maxwell told the Eagles he felt fine. Then suddenly after the trade, it seemed like he was kind of pulling up issues that he was that he was having shoulder problems. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I heard about it. I was kind of I don't know how fully true that is either, because he changed his entire like Twitter profile and whatever, all those social media profiles to the Dolphins before the physical even happened. So I don't think he was in like denial about it. He may have mentioned it, but they're blowing it, I don't know, out of proportion. I think it was more that Tannenbaum realized how ridiculously stupid this trade was, and someone was in his ear like, why would you do this? This doesn't make sense. And so I feel like the Dolphins played that up. They were going to use that as a way to get out of it. I think originally they were supposed to obtain a fourth rounder as well from the Dolphins, and I think the whole shoulder thing was their way of at least getting out of the fourth rounder. But if Tannenbaum would have X'd the whole deal, then his word wouldn't be good at all through the agents and different teams he's dealing with. So he had to keep to his word with Howie, but that's my personal opinion of what happened there.
Yeah, I was kind of agreeing with you. I was kind of thinking the same thing. I definitely agree with you. It was kind of leverage towards getting getting rid of some of the picks in the deal, because they were kind of wondering what picks the Eagles were going to get in return. So they were saying that if the Eagles were going to get multiple picks in return, that you know they were trying to eliminate as many of them as possible by doing that, which I think is kind of shady. And back to Alonzo, it'd be pretty interesting what happens with him. That was a true failed experiment after Chip Kelly, who obviously knew him from his time in Oregon, traded for him a year ago for Shady McCoy. And it looks like Kiko will be expected to be the middle linebacker in Miami, but it's not 100% sure. The Dolphins do have a vacancy at middle linebacker, and obviously Alonzo is a middle linebacker, but they have they were saying that they could kind of switch around a couple guys there. There were a couple reports there. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. So Alonzo was also saying that his knee problems were back to 100%, but there was, I don't know, there was still some reports that he could be okay by next year. But I don't know. There's so many reports out there. I'm reading this as I'm going along because there's so many rumors, but. He had some injury problems last year and missed five games. So be interesting to see what happens with that. And actually, before we move on, Miami actually restructured Maxwell's deal. He was set to make $18.5 million the next 2 years. Now that's cut back to $17 million, although his guaranteed money increases from $11.5 million to $13.5 million. And it said that they gave Alonzo a raise, though they didn't say how much that was for. And this past Wednesday, the Eagles, they signed former Bills corner Ron Brooks to a 3-year, $6 million contract. He had a concussion last year and was limited to only 54 snaps. Both Eagles starting cornerbacks last year, Maxwell and Nolan Carroll, received negative grades on Pro Football Focus. And Brooks will be reunited with Eagles defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz, who he played under in Buffalo 2 years ago. So that's an interesting personnel move. They also signed another former Bill middle linebacker, Nigel Bradham, to a 2-year deal. He'll replace Alonzo. I want to get your opinion on another move. They agreed to terms with former Texans right guard Brandon Brooks on a 5-year, $40 million deal. He played at right guard last season, but also has experience at left guard and right tackle. He'll replace Matt Tobin, who's a free agent. It looks like it's a real upgrade at guard, but is he worth $8 million a year? A lot of times they say linemen are worth close to $10 million, but I don't know if you really looked at this personnel move. I don't know if you kept up with some of these moves, but what do you think of the offensive line? Do you think if some of these moves are have improved the offensive line? And I know Jason Peters obviously made the Pro Bowl last year, but he's aging, and I think that was more so a Pro Bowl that was made more so just because of his name rather than of how well he did last year. And as for the move they made with Brooks, they shelled out a lot of money, although the guy has played pretty well recently. So what do you make of the offensive line?
Well, yeah, I love the signing of Brooks. I don't really necessarily know if the money made sense or not, but, I mean, I really don't care. They cleared out enough cap space with removing Maxwell, and then also with Sanchez and Blair today, they got another 5.5. So they got enough cap, so spend the money if you have it. I love the fact that Brooks is going back to the old traditional, 300-pound-plus lineman, 6'5", that's just going to be an anchor to the offensive line and just be a huge, huge person in the middle, a mauler, you know. And that's – he looks like he's a solid player, average to above average. And if you put him with Lane Johnson, Peters, and Kelsey, plus whoever we draft, and whoever they may still sign – I really like that signing a lot because we're going to get back to more of a traditional offensive lineman that I think was needed. Especially last year, you could just see our linemen, they would just blow right through the line on us. And, I mean, we couldn't run the ball at all. You know, we had some successful games, but I really do like the Brooks signing. And then as far as the other two, I forget the cornerback's name. What's his name again? Probably because he played zero games and had a concussion.
Let me look. I have it in my notes here. Let's see.
Whatever his name was.
It was Brooks. Ron Brooks.
It goes to my point. I really don't know anything about him, nor do I even know his name. I don't really have many expectations on him. That's definitely a Jim Schwartz guy that he's going to bring in, and I'm confident that he knows people that knows his system and obviously thinks that he'll be successful. It wasn't big money to bring him in, so I'm good with that. And then the linebacker from the Buffalo Bills, he's a really good player. So my uncle is actually a big Buffalo Bills fan, and I had contacted him right away when we got him, and he was Bradwell is the name. And then he was upset that they had lost him, especially to the Eagles, and he just didn't understand what Rex was doing in Buffalo letting him go. So I'm excited to see what he has to offer as well.
Yeah, and what you were saying about Roseman, I really liked a lot of the moves he made when, you know, he was GM here before Kelly took over. And he's really got a lot of bargains on these deals. He's really taken a page out of Ron Hextall's book. And it's been pretty interesting to see what's been going on. And obviously with the Brooks signing, we needed to upgrade the line, and then as well as losing Mathis 2 off seasons ago, that adds to it. So that was definitely a good signing there. And they also signed former Rams safety Rodney McLeod to a five-year, $37 million deal. The past three seasons, he's forced 12 turnovers, really impressive, which was, I believe, in the top 20 in the league. He's only 25, and he was ranked as the 10th best safety overall last year by Pro Football Focus. He'll definitely make a good tandem with Jenkins, who obviously was extended his past offseason as well. So I really like our safety tandem. It'd be interesting to see with what our corners can do. Although Walter Thurman, I don't know if you saw that, he's close to retiring due to wanting to express interest and endeavors in the film industry. Did you see that?
No. I'm actually interested in that. I liked McLeod to begin with. I liked Thurman, but I loved McLeod better. But this even makes it even better because his heart's not in it anyway. I don't know why Thurman would do that though. He has the opportunity here to make the most money he probably could with his next contract, based off his year. I don't know. That's probably a dumb. I think it's a dumb decision on his end. You could do the film career in a couple more years, get a 3-year deal, and then jump into the film industry.
Yeah. I think if you wait, at least, 5-6 years, see how much money you get. Try to make as much money as possible. He's 28. He's been in the league several years. I thought he had a really good underrated year last year. And it looked like he wasn't going to be re-signed, obviously, with all the money we had tied up. We obviously didn't know all these crazy moves were going to be happening. We didn't know, obviously, Chip. I guess we weren't sure, probably leaning towards Chip not being back this offseason or him coming back. It was kind of uncertain, and all these moves on top of it, personnel-wise, were just insane, freeing up all this cap space, the Murray trade, as well as the Maxwell and Alonzo trade, and as well as other ones. And I know they obviously have made some signings which have reduced the cap, but they have some space now to sign him. And Daily News reporter Les Bowen earlier today reported that several people around the Eagles reported that they believe that that he's considering at least retiring. I don't know. It's interesting. I've never really seen that happen before, but you see that happen, guys, after they retire, but never, when they're, I won't say in the prime of their careers, but when they can still make a considerable amount of money in the NFL. So that was a pretty interesting tidbit. So be interesting to see what happens.
He's been injury prone. His whole career, basically. So that makes it even better because McLeod, he's 25, I think, or 26, whatever it is, 4 seasons in the NFL. He has yet to be injured once. So we have also a durable player that looks like he can hit, man. I don't know if you checked out any of his highlights, but obviously everyone seems to point to the Emmanuel Sanders hit, but he looks like he can. Reminds me, not that he's Dawkins, don't get me wrong, but he reminds me of that type of player that you're not going to go across the middle or go near him because you know you're going to get punished. So I'm excited for him, coupled with Jenkins, especially with the wide nine, which they'll run off and on. There's more pressure on the safety, so you got to make sure that those two are intact.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty interesting. I hadn't even realized Thurman had missed that many games. I guess because, I don't know, I hadn't really kept track of his career prior to signing here, but yeah, you're right. Only played in 2 games in 2014 with the Giants. Only played in two games in 2012 with Seattle, although, you know, who knows how many snaps he was playing in as a rookie in 2010 when he missed a couple of games. But in 2011, he missed 10 games. So, like you said, he's missed a considerable amount
of
time.
Yeah, this is his payday. This is his time to get paid. That's such a dumb decision, in my opinion, for him. But I'm glad he did it because that probably opened the door for us to look into McLeod.
Yeah, and he just said about like 3 weeks ago to the Inquirer that he knows that this is his last big deal, and obviously we're getting this information today from a reputable source, so you know I'm not pulling this out of my ass, but he said this to the Inquirer 3 weeks ago regarding his last chance at a big contract. He said, "I'm not a young spring chicken anymore. This contract could potentially be my last, depending how long it is." And obviously, we know he's close to 30. So if he gets a 2-3 year deal, I said it would be like a 3 year deal, and guaranteed money. He'd make some good money. So I'm not understanding that deal at all. And if we're going, if we're sticking with the defense, I really like the switch from the 3-4 to the 4-3. I really didn't like the 3-4 at all. I think that was part of why we had a lack of success last year. I mean, obviously, there are many reasons why, but I really think, despite how amazing he was last year, I think Fletcher Cox is going to be even more amazing last year. He's close to a payday, too, and they've been acknowledging that. And I really like the Schwartz hire, too. And some of the moves recently, personnel-wise, I guess he knows what he's doing by, telling the Eagles, sign this guy, sign that guy, because he played under me. But I like the Schwartz move, but even more so, I like the switch to the 4-3. What did you make of that move?
I love it because I like that defensive style. But, I mean, the whole transition the 3-4 is successful in the league. I think it was more that the personnel we had in there didn't fit that scheme. And now that you move to back to the 4-3, you're able to keep, Fletcher Cox will be successful in whatever, but he's more fit for the 4-3. And now we can actually utilize Vinnie Carey, put him out there and have him make plays. So I'm excited for that. Curious how the linebacking core is going to work out, though. Jordan Hicks was very successful last year. We'll see how he moves and transitions to a 4-3 at the pro level. And Connor Barwin's going to probably basically defensive end. So I'm curious how the linebackers are going to work. You have Kendricks, Hicks, and then I'm drawing a blank here. I can't even think of who. Is it Najee Good? Who would be the linebacker right now at this point?
Yeah, I believe it's Najee Good.
That can't happen. So that's just not even you can't go into the season like that. So hopefully we'll figure something out through the draft. But they have some building to do there. And then you look at the secondary. Now we have McLeod, Jenkins, Rowe is up and coming, and then we got the eighth pick. So it's who are we going to put there? There's multiple different. You could fill a bunch of those needs depending on who's there at that time. I like Hargraves out of Florida, and I think he would be perfect to put in there. We'll see what happens, But I love the transition to back to the 4-3. And another point, Jim Schwartz. Defenses are, as a defensive coordinator anyway, are just, he's so successful. He knows what he's doing, and it's really going to help us to have him there and give Doug Peterson, someone that knows what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball, similar to Andy Reid having Jim Johnson there, that he didn't have to worry about defense. He just knew Jim knows what he's doing, and Jim's going to take care of it. That's ironic. They both have the same first name. I just noticed that right now.
Yeah, speaking of Vinny Curry, I think he'll have a great year as well. In a radio interview, Jim Schwartz, about a month ago, after he was hired, said he was going to, quote-unquote, cut the handcuffs off Vinny Curry. I think he fits the scheme perfectly, like you were saying. And that's when I mentioned the switch from the 3-4 to the 4-3, that's what I was implying, that they didn't have the personnel to really be successful with the 3-4. You know, like you're saying, the 3-4 can work, but you really got to have certain guys that can line up well with it. And obviously, just I just see our defense being a lot better next year. Last year, although he only had 3.5 sacks, schematically, it just didn't work for him. But the year before, he had 9 sacks, and I believe last year he was up there in hurries as well as in as far as league leaders. So I'd be interested to see what happens with that. And speaking of defensive ends and the defense, former Eagles defensive end Cedric Thornton was signed by the Cowboys today to a 4-year, $18 million deal. Just turned 27 and was a 2-gap defensive end last year in our 3-4. Cowboys desperately needed a lot of reinforcement on their D-line, so that move made a lot of sense. And as me and you just mentioned, you know, we already had a lot of defensive end help, and switching over to the 4-3, Thornton was kind of the man out, and his value is kind of hard to gauge from switching to the new personnel, although he did only miss 3 games the past 4 years. I don't know if you saw the news about the signing or not, but if you did, what did you make of the move?
Yeah, I saw. I really don't care. He was just solid, a very good player to just plug in and get a few snaps in there. I think he can be replaced. You know, I don't think he's going to set the world on fire by any means. It stinks he's going to Dallas because he did do well here, and he was just a solid player to come in there with the rotation and make plays. There's no drop off with him. He's not someone that's going to come in there and your defense is going to all of a sudden get gashed. He's going to fit right in, plug the hole, and do his job. So then again, those are the type of players that you want on your team that you may have wanted to retain him, but I don't even know what the contract was. I think it was $18 million over 3 years. I'm not sure if he's in the budget for that. But obviously, Jim Schwartz knows what he's doing, and based on his track record as a defensive coordinator. So I'm really not too bothered by it. And I know over there in Dallas, they'll screw it up. You know, they will. The days of my youth when they were winning Super Bowls in the early 90s are gone forever. They're kind of a laughing stock to me. Whatever happens, I'm almost confident at this point that they'll screw it up.
Yeah, definitely easily replaced, as is another defensive end, Brandon Bear, who was basically like minor news. They released him today. Brandon Bear only played in 5 games last year, in 21 games the past 2 years. He's 31 and it was the final year of his contract. Missed most of last year with a groin injury. Not really a well-known or good player. So moving along, speaking of not very good players, we talked a little, you mentioned this earlier, so we'll kind of focus our attention to it. Yesterday, or I think it was today actually, earlier today, Eagles also traded backup Mark Sanchez to the Broncos. Earlier this week, soon-to-be Hall of Famer Peyton Manning retired from Denver. Mark Sanchez was traded there in return for a conditional 2017 seventh-round pick. Sanchez was 4-6 here the past 2 years behind Sam Bradford and Nick Foles with 18 touchdowns, 15 picks, 7.6 yards per attempt, and the Broncos will carry his $4.5 million base salary. Sanchez was good years ago at the Jets. And I didn't mind him a couple of years ago when he backed up Foles when he went down. I think Foles had a groin injury. I can't remember what it was. But Sanchez was good for a start here and there. But I thought he played horrible this year when Bradford went down right around the time, like in the middle of the season. And he was so overpaid for a backup. And obviously, we all know that Bradford is injury prone. But with that being said, I think we can both agree paying a backup almost $5 million is insane. So what did you make of the move? Do you think Sanchez will be the starter in Denver since Brock Osweiler, the starter, or technically Osweiler wasn't the starter in Denver last year, but he was a starter at times. He was moved to the Texans. So do you think Sanchez will be the starter in Denver now?
I'm not sure. I just wanted what you said before that, the paying a backup that much money. Chase Daniels' contract is more than that, which is crazy.
Yeah, I was
going to
get to that in a minute, actually. Yeah, it's crazy.
So we'll jump there. That's crazy. But Sanchez, as far as the quarterback goes, you were talking about you didn't mind him and everything, but I don't think there's a, and this goes back to his Jets days. I don't think there's a quarterback that I've really had animosity towards more than him. I really hated Doug Peterson when he came in before McNabb. He really and I was young then, but Sanchez, I am so glad that he is gone. Just about every analyst you listen to, and they just say he's the best backup in the league, and I don't see it. I never did see it. He comes in, he may have one okay game. I think the Carolina game he played well, and then he just does what he does. He chokes every situation. If he's in the game, it's almost guaranteed you're going to lose. And with that said, I don't know how that makes him a good backup. And as you were saying, as him going to Denver, if he'll be the starter, I don't know. It depends, because if they had the defense that they had last year and the offensive line that they had last year, then yeah, maybe he could get by. Actually, their O-line was okay last year, so they may be able to improve that. But the defense, they lost some key players there, so I don't know if he will be the starter. I think they're looking around, and worst case scenario, they'll end up with Sanchez, because I don't think he can manage a game. When it comes down to it, if they're going for the win or they need a play to be made, he's not going to make the play. So I don't know. I would say if I'm Elway, I would say no. I don't even understand why. I'm glad we got rid of him, I guess you would say. I don't understand the hype of Sanchez. I don't know why he would be acquired. I can name so many other backup quarterbacks that I'd rather have in there than him.
Yeah, he wasn't bad in with the Jets. Obviously, this was years ago, and he also played with arguably the best defensive unit in the league, including Darrell Revis. And last year in three starts with the Eagles, he had 4 TDs and 4 picks and a quarterback rating of 80.7. He had one good game, I would say, in that Thanksgiving blowout loss to Detroit, where he had 2 touchdowns and a QB rating of 116.1. But he threw 3 picks in that blowout loss to Tampa, and he had 0 touchdowns and a pick in that loss to Miami. So he's a backup. Yeah, backups are backups for a reason, because they're inconsistent. And even though he has a good game here and there, you know, obviously not every starting quarterback is going to be great every game, or Tom Brady or Peyton Manning every game. They're you know, Hall of Famers for a reason, because there are only a handful of them that, you know, I don't want to say a handful of them. There are only a handful of them in the league that can really do that and accomplish that. I mean, like a coming in the next year, probably like a Brady or a Breeze or a Rodgers that can really accomplish that now that Manning's retired. And even then, he had a horrendous year last year for obvious reasons. And Sanchez, I don't see him succeeding next year, even if he somehow wins that starting job in Denver, which probably won't say much considering there won't be really any good starters. It'd be interesting to see if they sign Manziel, who was released today by Cleveland. But anyways, we'll get to the Chase Daniels move, which you mentioned. He agreed to terms with the Eagles today on a 3-year, $21 million deal. He'll reunite with Eagles head coach and former Chiefs offensive coordinator Doug Peterson. Peterson, he extremely denied that he'll compete for the starting job, and he said explicitly that he'll be a backup, although a lot of people will say that going into camp, considering the contract and obviously Bradford's injury problems, you know, that they'll battle it out for the starting job. Bradford's missed 17 games the past 4 years, and obviously, you know, has had a lot of wear and tear over his body. So do you see it being a quarterback controversy, or do you just see the Eagles overpaying for a guy that Peterson really liked and Bradford still having the job?
Yeah, I think they just overpaid for a guy that Peterson Peterson really likes. They basically just traded contracts with, well, this year anyway. They didn't trade contracts altogether with them as far as cap hits go with Sanchez. So I think it's kind of set up in a position where they can release Bradford if he has a bad year and then move Chase into the starting role if they want next year. So I think the way they did it is they overpaid for him and got him here. And then they have – the way the deals are structured, they can get out of the contracts, or at least out of Bradford's contract. So if Bradford ends up being like the person he was supposed to be when he's drafted number one overall, how many years has he been in the league? And we're still saying that, by the way. Can't wait for this potential that – every year, I feel like, is about him. So if for some reason that magically happens, then they just have a backup quarterback they're overpaying for, and they have their quarterback. But if not, they can move Chase into the starting role and groom whatever quarterback they draft in this year's draft to eventually take over year three. And that's kind of how I see it laid out, because I think Peterson – sees a lot of himself in Chase, as he says, but I think he thinks more of him. It's kind of a weird theory, oh man. I kind of think he like vicariously lives through Chase in a sense that if Chase got his shot and was successful, that's what Peterson would have like imagined himself to have done. And he like pulls for Chase in that way that maybe he could pull that off. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, he's been in the league 6 years and he only has two starts. I don't understand this move at all. I mean, I understand it that Peterson likes him and obviously knows him a lot from his time in Kansas City, but you're given $12 million guaranteed and $21 million overall, and, you know, more than one or two year deal to a guy who has two career starts. This guy was undrafted out of Missouri. It's baffling.
I didn't know he was undrafted.
Yeah, I'm looking at his stats now on Pro Football Reference. I don't understand this signing at all. He was clearly pressured, Roseman was, by Peterson to make this move. out of, you know, maybe chemistry or, you know, friendship maybe when they were, the two were together in Kansas City, because otherwise Roseman's been making too many good moves as of late to make this move, because otherwise he wouldn't have made this. Same with the Schwartz move. Not the Schwartz move wasn't the bad move. The one that the Brooks move. I mean, Ron Brooks. A lot of guys, you know, they give him a vote of confidence, whether it be a coach or coordinator, and then they persuade the owner or the GM to do that. Obviously, you know, they do that a lot in sports, so. It'd be interesting to see what happens. Now, with all these crazy trades and signings recently, we haven't heard much in the last couple of days about Ryan Matthews, who was like the first, maybe after Murray, the first rumor to go around that he was being traded. A few days ago, NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reported that Matthews was still in the market, but was available for the right price. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. He's 28. They still obviously have Sproles, who was used and utilized mostly on special teams, and Kenyon Barner at running back. Do you see Matthews here next year? Obviously, you know, they still have three running backs, but they're paying Matthews you know, a decent amount of money. This year, he's going to make $3 million. Next year, $4 million. And then he's a free agent in 2018.
I think they shop everyone, and he just happened to be on one of the reports. If they, like, I think it is what it, like exactly what you said. If he doesn't make that much money to be a running back. So if he's your starter, he's an injury-prone running back. If he's your starter, that's a pretty good deal coupled with Sproles. I think if they see that a team had interest and they could actually gain value from it, then it would be a no-brainer to move him, because he's injury-prone, and then running backs basically grow on trees. Unless you're Adrian Peterson, and would, it seems to be maybe Todd Gurley, but even the second half of his year wasn't where it was in the beginning. I mean, running backs just, they're not, I don't want to say they're not needed, because you need a running game, but they're not, the star running back is not needed to compete and win for Super Bowls. It's just, it doesn't really, it's not necessary to have. You can have, and it's a bonus, but the main thing is having a running game and a defense. So I think that's another reason why they moved DeMarco, and why they would move, is they'll just draft a running back or sign a Chris Ivory, or I think Kyrie Robinson just got signed. So they're all over the place. They can just sign, come in, have a good year. I don't know if you play fantasy football or not, but it's a perfect example, because a lot of times you'll have a one back, and as soon as that guy goes down or gets hurt on the waiver wire, everyone fights to get their backup, and that backup typically comes right in and puts up awesome stats. And that just proves that it's kind of a next, like kind of like Chip says, honestly, like next man up, you know? So Ryan Matthews, I think he'll be here, but I just think it's whatever with the Eagles. If they get a good deal, all right, see you. But if not, you're a cheap running back, that's good. And then you hit the holes, and as long as you're healthy, we'll roll with you.
Yeah, it's a quarterback driven league. You know, you look at the, you know, like you were saying, you know, there's a lot, you know, there's great running backs, but, you know, the league's built mostly on quarterbacks and great defenses, you know, like, you know, Cam Newton, Brady, Rodgers, Breeze, J.J. Watt, you know, guys like that. Only out of the past 10 years, only one running back has been awarded MVP, so... And that was Peterson. Now, you know, I don't always look at awards, but it's kind of interesting sometimes when you look at that, because I think back in the day, running backs were utilized more. Guys weren't throwing 40 touchdown passes a year. It was more so like 25 a year, you know, you were lucky if you had 30 touchdown passes a year. I think Matthews is a great guy. Like you said, he'll get you some good rushes, and he's not really a 20 carry per game guy. So I think he stays put. But at the rate Roseman's going, who knows? He's finding a lot of suckers out there, so it'd be pretty interesting to see what happens. I would really like to see Sproles get a lot more carries. I thought he's been really underutilized. I know he made the Pro Bowl, but that was, you know, pretty much because of his special teams play. I don't know. It'd be pretty interesting to see what happens. I don't know if we got to it, but did we get to the Rodney McLeod deal with the Rams?
We talked about him. Yeah.
Yeah. So overall, a lot of great moves this off season. We'll see what more Howie can do. He's still kind of chipping away at, you know, somebody made a good point at all the players that Chip liked and all the players that that Chip got, they're kind of getting rid of. I know why I brought up McLeod, because I saw a report earlier today that when they introduced him, that he said that he wanted to play just like Dawkins. He said, "I'm able to just be fearless out there, even though my size."
That.
Yeah, he said he said he's tough as fuck. He said, you know, he strikes me as a guy with a lot of passion, and it seems like they're kind of bringing in guys that they weren't like locker room cancers like Jackson and McCoy, which, by the way, we haven't really heard a lot about that case with McCoy recently, who looks like he won't be charged with that. Have you heard anything about that recently? We only have a couple minutes left, but I haven't heard anything.
I think it's outrageous that he's even being. I don't know. I feel like I didn't get into it, so I can't even really speak on it. But I don't want to get into the whole police officer thing either. But it sounds to me like it was a bar fight. People were drinking, and if I was the guy that got sucker punched, it would just be swept under the rug as if nothing happened. So I don't know who's right or who's wrong, but it just sounds like drunk people at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, people drinking, always dumb shit always occurs. But what I had heard was that they were drinking. A friend of McCoy's, he was with another player who he was friends with, and a couple other friends up
Brinkley.
At a table, and. Somebody had taken like a glass. They were drinking and away from the table. I don't know why. And I guess the cops started throwing the first punches. I guess is why he's not being charged. So we'll see what happens with that. They had footage of the whole thing and the.
To me, it's just a non-story. Like, handle it like men, and obviously. Punches were thrown. That's what it, how it should be. No weapons were used. No anything like that. So like that's the way it should be handled, and that's the way, I guess, it used to be handled. It's a fight, and drunks be drunks. I don't know.
Yeah, they were off duty cops, and they throw the first punch. I don't see, you know, the problem with the problem that McCoy should be charged. A lot of times.
Well, I mean, he's probably no angel in this spot. I mean, he was probably talking whatever crap to whoever, and they just happen to be police officers, so they're both wrong. But it shouldn't be a news story that we shut down our TVs for. But
yeah, and a lot of times, you know, obviously celebrities and the public eye, so they're more inclined to, you know, they do a lot of stupid shit, and they're going to get even more stuff for it, so more crap from it from the media. But I wanted to thank Fred for coming on the show and everybody for listening and for their support. Thanks for coming on, Fred.
Thanks for having me. It was a fun time.
Absolutely.